B-Pod Studios.
Belger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no-good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man, Mel. Nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The 2-2. And they get him to chum on a ball in the dirt. That's going to do it. The Dodgers come into Boston and take 2 out of 3. The best record in the game gets even better.
And that's what we're going to start today with the Red Sox. Felger Maz here on a Monday from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. A re-entry Monday. A little bit of a summer lineup. I'm joined by Adam Jones in the Maz chair. Hi, Jones.
Hi.
And we got Marshall Hook over there in our update studios. How do you feel about your baseball team, Jones?
I actually came out of the weekend initially wanting to give them a little half credit.
What?
A little half credit.
For losing 2 out of 3.
Yeah. I mean, they go to overtime against the Dodgers, extra innings rather, against the Dodgers. You know, they don't get their pity point like they do in the NHL. They go to extra innings. They beat them up in the first game. It's the best team in baseball. I wanted to give them a little half credit. And then I remembered that, because they basically took the month of April off, they're not allowed to get that credit anymore. They buried themselves early. If they didn't do that, maybe I'd say, you know what? They went toe-to-toe with the best team in baseball. They're still in a good spot. No harm, no foul. But because they buried themselves early on this year, no, you can't let a game like that slide. You can't let a series like that slide.
Kind of a swing game. That was kind of that's a swing game. How important, I don't know. But, you know, as you say, you come out of the All-Star break after you finish strong when you had an excuse not to. You come off that London trip and then you win 5 of 6 against horrible teams. But anyway, you know, I would not have been surprised if they had lost 5 of 6 after that London trip. So you lose, you win 5 of 6. You come out of the All-Star break against the best team in baseball. Here you are last night, chance to take the series. You tie the game in the 8th with back-to-back homers. And if you go on and win that game, you're kind of feeling good about yourself. There's a little bit of a swing there. There's a little bit of wind at your sails, I think. And instead, what really let them down last night was the offense. They couldn't convert those situations in extra innings. I think they had a winning run in scoring position in the 9th, 10th, and 11th innings. Was it the 11th that Jackie Bradley led off with the double?
11th inning, yep.
And then got thrown out going to third. How'd you feel about that?
I was pretty excited for that. You know,
I'm just going to set you up on the Jackie Bradley thing.
I didn't think it was very good base running by a guy who I admit is generally a pretty good base runner. Here's my big beef with it, though, outside of just piling on Bradley. Didn't Cora treat it completely differently earlier in the game?
He bunted earlier in the game, didn't he?
He bunted in the 9th inning, and I know Bradley was at first after he drew a walk with whatever crap reliever from the Dodgers couldn't find the strike zone. But he drew a walk. They bunted him up to second base. And then Cora handled it completely differently. So I'd really pile more on the manager there.
No,
for being, yes.
More on the manager than the guy trying to take third?
Yeah, for being
inconsistent.
Jonesy. At least be consistent.
Jonesy, you can't get caught there.
No, of course not. But the approach from Cora's miserable.
Okay, like,
pick one or the other.
Oh, well, okay, but that I wouldn't blame him. I wouldn't blame Cora. I wouldn't blame Cora because Jackie Bradley lost his mind and tried to take third. You can't do that.
Yeah, I do. I blame him for that. You should be consistent. Why is that ridiculous?
It's ridiculous.
If you're gonna bunt in the 9th, you should bunt in the 11th. If you're going to let him swing in the 9th, then let him swing in the 11th. But I put that on the manager.
So because the manager's inconsistent, the base runner's allowed to run like a complete jackass?
I'm sorry. When did I say that Jackie Bradley was allowed to run like a complete jackass?
You're saying the manager was more responsible for that than Bradley.
I have a bigger problem with the manager, and I would say he's more responsible for that. Yeah, be consistent.
Oy. That's so weirdly wrong, but whatever. That's sort of a sidebar. The thing is, they had their chances last night, and that would have been a nice win, and I think you just sort of feel differently about the whole team. You know, that's why I think it's a big swing. You feel differently about the whole team in victory or defeat last night, especially when you come back in the 8th inning with those back-to-back homers. So, I don't know. Hawk, how do you feel about your baseball team?
Yeah, I don't feel... I said on Friday that if they went out and swept the Dodgers this weekend, I still wouldn't feel differently because the real test for them, the real test wasn't some National League series. All due respect to the Dodgers being the winningest team in baseball coming into this series. The real test is the 14, 18, whatever it is, back-to-back games, Tampa, New York. Because we've seen before that they can go on these little runs and they win a few and you think, oh, they're there. Well, great. You know, they finally got things together. And then, I don't know, they go to London and get their asses kicked by the Yankees. So talk to me after they play Tampa and New York over and over again. Then I'll tell you what kind of team you have.
Now, this weekend and last night would have shown you something. The Dodgers are a good team. Dodgers are, you know, one of the best in baseball, if not the best.
Didn't we think the Twin series showed us something, though?
Okay.
They took 2 out of 3 in that one, and we kind of felt like they had some wind at their sails, and then not so much. So, I mean, I'm with you. I feel like that
I mean, also
was...
And I'm going to sort of cut you off, but just the nature of last night's game. It's on national TV.
Sure.
You come back with 2 home runs in the bottom of the 8th to tie the game. And it was just sort
the
of...
The Twins are still the Twins. And I mean, the Dodgers have been in the World Series and the NLCS, and they have the best record in base, so the Twins are still the Twins.
You're answering your own question.
But I did think they had some momentum coming out of that Twin series, and they didn't at all. That's when they proceeded to go to London and get dumped on by the Yankees. So, I don't know. I would much prefer a win last night. I wanted to give them a half credit. And then I remembered what Hook and Maz were talking about late last week, burying themselves early in April. You can't afford to pee away games like that. Not when you buried yourself with your 6-13, 7-13 start, whatever it was.
Okay, meanwhile, Chris Sale gets killed again. It's a third straight start with at least 5 runs allowed, something like that. And then after the game, as he's done pretty much all year, he takes full responsibility for it. Says, you know, I'm still working, still grinding. It's not going to give up. But you know, it's tough going out there and being a liability for your team. He calls himself a liability. Jones, he says, I'm just not getting it done. I usually can go out there and find a way, navigate your way through a game. You're going to hit some rough patches and things like that, and I'm usually able to get out of it. But for whatever reason, the cards aren't falling my way. Luck's not going my way, and I'm not helping myself out there either. So I've got no other excuses. Again, calls himself a liability. Your thoughts on Chris Sale?
Yeah, I'm just tired of this song and dance after every start now. Like, we get it. You suck. So figure it out. Like, get your ERA back in the threes, then let's talk. Like, after every start, and I've given him a lot of credit over the months and starts, as I'm sure other people have as well, and I'm just done doing that. Like, okay, you face the music and you're beating yourself up and you're not running and hiding from it. You're not Kyrie. You're not David Price. Like, it's better than that. But at the same time, you need to fix it. Like, I'm tired of hearing the same thing over and over again. I'm a liability. I've got to be better. I suck today. That's every start now. So just spend a little less time with whatever you need to do to explain it away after the start and a little more time figuring it out.
So I think the weekend for me, and again, maybe I'm putting too much stock into that series, but that's where I finally said, okay, this is really not right. I was willing to give Chris Sale a full half season because, I mean, like you said, for the whole team, they baked in a slow start for all these guys. And Sale, you know, none more than Sale. And so you want to tell me it's a slow start? You want to tell me that they had an extended spring training for him? You want to tell me he and they are World Series hungover? I'm going to allow for all of that. And okay, well, now you're into the second half. Now you're past the All-Star break. Now it's the Dodgers in the first weekend. And now it's like, okay, that is...
time to go.
That has worn off now. That's finally where I'm going to say, now what? Legit actual issues with Chris Sale? What the hell? And so that to me, I put more stock into that game than I have pretty much all year because I was willing to give him the first half of the year. Now that's over.
No, and he's not even competitive in a lot of these starts. You know, like he comes out, he puts the team behind the eight ball. He doesn't give the team a chance. They're usually dominant in interleague play. I think it's the first home series. I should double check this. I think it's the first home interleague series they've lost since like 2014. He hasn't won at Fenway since July of 2018. Like, it's just
insane.
It's a mess. So I get it. You're accountable and you're taking the blame and you're standing in front of the media. And we ask a lot of athletes to do that. So all the credit in the world. You've been doing that now for 3 months. It's time to figure something out. I don't want to hear it anymore. I don't want to hear from you that you sucked anymore. I know it. I don't need to hear it after the game. I watched the game. I've watched you all year. I know you sucked. I know you have sucked all year. I'm really sick and tired of hearing that, quite frankly.
Hook, who you compare Chris Sale to, or who do you, you know, who do you not want to compare him to, but you might have to start?
Well, I am not the only one to do this. The moment I walked into the studio, Matt McCarthy yelled at me for take robbery, as he has many times compared, as have I, Chris Sale to Tim Lincecum out in San Francisco, who, like Chris Sale, was awesome in his early years. Now, Lincecum got to this point a little bit earlier in his year. He was 28 years old when he kind of turned the corner, whereas Chris Sale sitting there looking at 30. But they're both skinny guys. They both have violent deliveries, and they're both guys that you look at and say, there's no way that this can keep up for a long, long time. And I got to tell you, if you take a look at the beginning of Tim Lincecum's downturn, it looks a lot like this.
Okay. I'm starting to give that a little credence. That's starting to creep into my thinking. I was willing to give Sale the first half, But now it's getting ridiculous. So I'm willing to entertain that, allow that. One more Sox item, then we'll get to your calls. Andrew Cashner, the trade, your thoughts.
I mean, I like it, assuming they're not done. If you're telling me this is it, and I kind of think some people are hinting that it's it, then I have a problem with it.
And by some people, you mean Dave Dombrowski.
I mean Dave Dombrowski, who I generally like as a GM. I think he takes way too much flack here as a GM. He won a World Series, did exactly what he said he was going to do. And I think if you go through and look at his specific trades, he's done better than he gets credit for. I think he certainly hasn't lost a lot of trades, and there are some big wins in there too. So generally, I like him and the job he does. His blind spot for the bullpen is well documented, and like his refusal to not fix it is maddening.
Well, here's his comment from the weekend I think you're referring to. He says, we're going to add Nathan Eovaldi. He said, adding. We're going to add Nathan Eovaldi. For some reason, people seem to not like grasp on that. He's a big addition for us coming, and we feel he'll be ready to go within about a week to join us on a full-time basis out there. So that comment bothered you.
Yeah, that's like saying, you know, oh, well, the Celtics didn't do much this offseason, but they're adding a healthy Gordon Hayward. Like, that narrative is annoying. Like, I know that Nathan Eovaldi's coming back. I already have him penciled into the closer spot.
Do you know he's coming back?
Well, fair point. I think he's coming back. I already am bracing for him coming back, and I'm on board with that move, by the way. But that's not an addition. You don't get credit for that, Dave. He was already on the roster. We were already planning for it. So you have to go out and do more. And I wonder if the owner is going to let him do more, or how much more the owner is going to let him do. Because I think Cashner was more of a deal than a perfect fit. You know, the Orioles are picking up a lot of that tab.
Crazy deal in terms of, I mean, we don't need to give you all the nuts and bolts of it, but the amount of money that Baltimore is picking up, and not that it's a lot, but like they're picking up over, you just said, over
on
half?
On a percentage basis, I think it's a lot.
I think it's 50%, and if he hits like any performance escalators, they're picking all that up.
Right, there's bonuses that then go back. It's a complicated sort of thing, but it's really sort of saving the Sox just a couple million bucks. That's how set they are on not going over that tax.
Right, so does this prevent you? I don't think Wheeler makes a ton of money either, but like,
well, Wheeler's reporting out today is Wheeler's no longer
done.
The Red Sox, that's a done thing.
Well, yeah, because they've also added somebody, so yeah. Maybe that's part of what took him out of it. And I wonder if, you know, could they have been in on him or another arm or a more expensive bullpen arm? But John Henry says, yeah, you know, we're not gonna dump a lot more money into this team, which I do understand on one hand, but I also think is shameful. If you're in it and you have a gaping hole and you're the Red Sox and you make money hand over fist and you think a bullpen arm is what's preventing you or a better fifth starter, then you should be in on that. And I just don't know if Cashner moves the needle enough. I don't feel like they gave up much. I'm okay with it, but I just hope this isn't it.
Okay, quickly, one word answer. Have you given up on the team yet, Jones?
No.
Hook?
No.
Okay, me neither. We're not there yet. I don't think you're there yet. I'm getting legitimately concerned on Chris Sale. That I would say. That's a development over the weekend. So I still thought last night was a big swing game for them, a chance for them, and they blew it. Your thoughts on the Red Sox with Jones, Hook, and Felger on a reentry Monday.
Miss something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
The 3-1. Make it 4. And L.A. has reclaimed the lead.
There are a lot of Dodger fans left in this stadium. I mean, that felt like a home cheer. And maybe there's some Boston or baseball fans, too, that are like, okay, hour 5, we want to see somebody score. This place erupted as much as it can.
And you're getting cheered out of your building by Dodger fans? Dodger fans. That was a go-ahead run. Hector Velasquez, a rough 12th inning, I would say. Walks in the go-ahead run at an interference play. Gave up 3. And the Sox lose what could have been a pretty important swing game, I think. To your thoughts, leading off with the Red Sox again, Jones and Hook alongside Felger here on a re-entry Monday. Ryan in Boston, lead us off on the Red Sox. What do you got?
Felger, I can't believe you're not talking more about this non-bunt situation. I think it's baseball 101. You have a runner on second, nobody out. If they have the 9-hitter Hernandez bunt and get Bradley to third, then you just need a Mookie flyout, sack fly for the win. Even if they walk Mookie,
oh no, I get
you
it.
Got Devers and Bogarts up to try to drive him in. I just don't understand why you're not talking about that more.
Okay, because losing your mind over a bunt is just a little much for me. I will say this. I would have bunted there. That's the one situation. It's really the one for me that I really do is first and second, nobody out, and that lead runner is the go-ahead run. To me, then you bunt, you know, you bunt second and third over with one out every time, okay? But in that one, you know, I do that too. I would have bunted Bradley over. I'm just not, when he gets caught going to third base on a ground ball up the middle, that's on him. That's not on the manager. That's my point.
I mean, so I hate the inconsistency from Cora, and I'm actually, again, I hate the inconsistency. I wouldn't have bunted in either spot. I hate giving away outs at the end of games. I know it's the bottom of your lineup, but I don't want to give away an out with a guy who can score on a single. Like, I don't want to give that out away. I don't think that's a good trade-off. So I wouldn't have bunted in the ninth. It didn't work in the ninth. I wouldn't have bunted in the 11th, but the one thing I would like a manager to do is be consistent.
Okay, well, fair enough. But that base running play is on Jackie Bradley. Justin in Shrewsbury, your thoughts on the Cashner trade?
So how you doing? I don't really think the Cashner trade is like all that we need. We need more than that, and probably Dombrowski hopefully isn't done. And also, I was at the game last night, and there are a lot more Dodger fans, and there are more Rowdy than the Sox fans, so that's not a good look.
Yeah, I don't know. Where the hell does that come from? Have the Dodger fans come out here and out-voice you. The Cashner trade, to me, I don't know, and I think you're right about Dombrowski. Like, I think his batting average here is pretty good as a GM. And I've sort of, and maybe I'm getting, this is to a fault, but I thought the way he hit on Nathan Eovaldi last year, I'm sort of giving him the pass and saying, well, if he could find sort of a diamond in the rough on Eovaldi, he can do the same thing on Cashner. And I'm reasonably optimistic that this is a good, you know, that this is a good piece, that if they make the playoffs, he's someone who could swing to the bullpen in that case. And in the meantime, he's a good fifth starter. And so, like, in a vacuum, I like the deal too. If that's all there is, I guess I'd be a little disappointed, but at least they're investing in the team, and they are.
Yeah, I mean, they are. They're adding, and I don't think they gave anything up. You know, I mean, they gave up a couple of 17-year-olds that I never heard of.
Kids who don't even shave yet, 17-year-olds.
Yeah, they play, I think, for the Red Sox, too. I think that's the name of the team. Unless I misread it in the press release.
No, I think it's their Dominican youth program.
I thought it literally said Red Sox 2 in the press release. But whatever. They're 17 years old. They don't shave. And yeah, you didn't give up anything. So it's not what they gave up. It's just, if this is an either or, and it's kind of been presented a lot as an either or, I like the Cashner move. A fifth starter, sure, can help. I don't think a fifth starter in today's Major League Baseball is all that important. Who's the fifth starter for Tampa?
Oh, no. So
Trick question. They don't have one.
Right.
So I don't think the fifth starter is all that important. I would much rather have another bullpen arm.
Unless he can transition to the bullpen. Which,
okay.
That was Eovaldi's value last year, was
sure,
in the bullpen.
That's fine. If and when we get to the postseason and he can help in the bullpen, great. But I don't need a fifth starter between now and October is my point. I'd like help in the bullpen. I like the Eovaldi move. I think Eovaldi can help. If you're telling me Cashner is going to go there, great. In the meantime, who's helping the bullpen for the rest of July, August, and September? That's
so,
what I want to know.
So here's a second guess. They DFA'd Nunez today?
Yes, he just got DFA'd, yeah.
Okay, so Nunez, no mas. $4 million a year.
Five this year.
I'm sorry, $5 million. Steve Pierce came back for six. You take that money, you can get yourself a couple good relievers, at least one of the elite guys that was on the market this past year. So I think there's your second guess. I'm not even really on Henry for not going over the tax. I'm not?
I am.
I mean, what? Is he just supposed to keep spending and spending and spending and spending when he spent the most he or they have ever spent in their history?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he is. Yes. You're the Boston Red Sox. Act like it. So, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes.
To me, the bigger second guesses are you have more than enough money to figure this out. And instead, you gave Nunez and Pierce over $10 million combined. And meanwhile, you know, your big ad in the bullpen is going to be a player you already have. That's the second guess. That money you spent on those two players should have been spent somewhere
else. Okay, but I'm not disagreeing with any of that. They should have helped the bullpen in the offseason. Totally agree. If you want to tell me they don't sign Eovaldi, great. I never liked that contract. You want to tell me it's Pierce or Nunez instead, use that money differently? Fine. I'm on board with all that. The problem is now that decision's done. So now it's the trade deadline, and now your team is deficient in the bullpen. What do you do about it? And I don't like John Henry saying, yeah, Dave, you know, stay below the luxury tax because Linda needs a new pair of shoes. Like, I don't like that. I don't like that approach.
Tom and Quincy, you make it for the duration last night?
No, I did not.
How could you? Yeah, how could you?
Mike, I'm so frustrated because, you know, no team comes to, like, a hotter fall than them. Like, after Friday night, everyone's like, all right, this looks good. And then Saturday, Sale gets his teeth kicked in again. You know, he didn't even make it five innings, I don't think. And, you know, all you need is one guy to come down and you know, mellow it out, slow it down, stop the bleeding. Did you see the relief's pitching line for Saturday? That is ridiculous.
Stephen Wright was good, I thought. I like Stephen Wright's outing.
Dude, the whole bullpen, seriously, real quick. 4 1/3, 6 earned runs, 7 hits, 3 walks, 3 bombs. Now, but no, it's great that they went and got Estrada. That's awesome. Can they please get somebody out there that can get someone out? I don't know.
Yo, I'm sorry, Tom. I mean, I'm with you. I wanted bullpen over starter, but I feel like this guy, I don't know. I feel like he's the Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah, but okay, but let...
Meaning he can transition, he can be out there.
I know, you keep saying that, but that means you get to October.
Yeah.
What if you don't get to October? Like, that's great, and I like Cashner in a vacuum, as you said.
What are they, 2 games out of the wild card?
I think it's 2.5 now. I just looked it up. I think it's 2.5.
Okay, I just assume they're getting there, for so crying out loud.
I do too, because the teams around them all stink. Like, Tampa's been falling back. Oakland's not good. Cleveland's about to sell. Like, Cleveland's about to go into sell mode from everything, whether it's Trevor Bauer or whomever, and they are 2 games up on the Red Sox. The Rangers aren't good. So I feel like the teams around them aren't good, and they are the most talented, no questions asked. But I would not be as cavalier about it as you are, or maybe Dave Dombrowski will be for the second year in a row. They need to make an ad in the bullpen.
Bob and Needham, you're up next with Felger and Jones. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Michael, talk about Barry in the lead. John Henry's complaining about money. Are you kidding me? This guy, should we have a GoFundMe page for this guy? Are you kidding me? They're making money hand over fist at that operation. Hand over fist. And he's saying, I don't want to go. Are you kidding me? Just because you have $80 or $90 million in dead money between Pablo, Pedroia, Thornburg, yada, 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 it's not our fault. And the notion that you're losing money, why don't you open the books for us then? Please.
Okay. All right, so look, I didn't like that comment either. But I have a hard time getting on a guy for spending when he's led the league in spending. Is this now 3 straight years? I think it's 3 straight years they've set team records and led MLB in spending.
Yeah, so spend a little more.
I think that's, I mean, at some point that becomes ridiculous, and the owner's done his job financially.
Okay, but you're trying to defend a World Series. Like, if they're mediocre in their middle of the pack and it's been a few years since, then I get it. Then you're overspending on a team that hasn't been competitive. You're trying to be the first team to repeat since the Yankees, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I think the fans deserve that. And I think, you know, I'm not telling him to go blow it out and acquire a $30 million a year player, but a $10 million reliever on a prorated salary is what? $3 million? Go get him.
How do you feel about this, Hook?
Your approach, I mean, yes, in a vacuum saying he spent a lot of money, at some point it has to stop is great. But the flip side of that is, we don't need to win a World Series this year. I guess this didn't work out. It's the only thing John Henry can do at this point is spend money. So the only thing Dave Dombrowski can do is trade guys. The only thing players can do is go out and play. They all have their roles. And unfortunately for the billionaire, his role is to spend money. And so for him not to do it at this point is for him to say, yeah, this season, it doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
I'm sorry. If you're the owner, you got to spend.
Okay, we are going to continue with this. We're opening Red Sox. Jones and I want to give you just a real quick thought on the tennis yesterday. That's something, I don't know if you've ever said that in the 10 years of Felger and Mazza, if I've ever actually teased tennis talk, but we're going to give you just a little second of it because I thought yesterday was worth it. And your phone's right after Hook's update.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
And that's it. On a massive miss hit, Wimbledon number 5. For the Serbian superstar, what a treat this has been. The top seed triumphs and it can surprise no one. He's beaten Roger Federer today in the longest final in women history. And he's beaten Roger Federer in all 3 Wimbledon finals that he's played him in. Son Stefan here to watch his father's triumph.
How about just a couple minutes on the tennis? It was an all-time match yesterday. And in watching the commentary, listening to the commentary today, Jones, you know what I think is not being said nearly enough?
What?
Federer freaking choked. He gagged. absolutely gagged. I mean, at least that was that the BBC. Where the hell was that from, Billy? At least the BBC guy said that the last championship point was a massive mishit. Yeah, mishit.
Yeah, he missed it just slightly.
Hit the rim of his racket and ended up in the second, you know, deck there or whatever. He chucked it into the stands on a, you know, standard forehand.
That's after, by the way, he didn't go after a ball that was on the line, like right in front of him. They replayed the point prior to that. It was right in front of him. I know the ump called it out, but it was right in front of him.
He was up 8-7 in games, serving.
Hadn't lost a serve all day.
Up 40-15. Mm-hmm. He hadn't been broken all day.
Well, that's not completely true. I think he actually got broken earlier in the fifth set, and then, you know, in some of the tie breaks he lost on his serve, but until the fifth set, he hadn't been broken. Actually, I think he did get broken earlier in the fifth set too.
But either way,
his serve was dominant. And he outplayed Djokovic the whole day.
One more points. So when you tallied up all the points, he had more points won in his favor, but he's got double match point on his serve, and he blew both first serves. Had to come in with the softer second serve and then lost those points quickly. He gagged. Is anyone saying that about Roger Federer? He choked.
No, you know why?
He's a sainted.
Yeah, it's these individual sports. It's about the personality, right? So you don't trash the big personality. You don't trash the meal ticket. It's different than, well, maybe it's not that different than how broadcasters talk about teams and athletes, but especially in these individual sports, golf, tennis. Yeah, Roger Federer is a saint. He's the greatest to ever play.
Well, he tightened up, man. He tightened up in those situations. When he had a chance to close it out, he tightened up big time. That last, I mean, was it like 6-3 in that top
tiebreak?
It was
6-3 when he whacked it way out of bounds. Yeah,
but it's, you know, he's still playing for the championship, and he hit the thing freaking out of the stadium.
Well, and if he stays on serve, it's 6-3. He has two serves. It's 6-5. You put a little pressure on Djokovic on his serve, and yeah, he didn't even let that breathe.
So, but here's my point. I used to be a huge tennis guy, Jones, and I date myself a little bit because I'm a little older than you. But when I was a kid, and I sort of feel like I do this about golf all the time too, and I feel sort of similar about it. I used to be a huge golf guy, a huge Jack Nicklaus fan, and was invested in all that stuff when I was a kid. I was such a sports dork. I watched everything. Right? I was just and I still am. But when I was a kid in tennis, I just thought it was such a great, colorful era. And it was so big. It was such a big deal. That era. And my era was Borg, Connors, McEnroe, Lendl, like that sort of grouping. Okay. And then when Agassi came along and Boris Becker, that was a little bit later. So I'm really talking about really more like early to mid 80s. And you just had this wonderful run of, you know, colorful men's champions that went back and forth and were always going against each other. And McEnroe, Connors, Borg, Lendl, Borg, McEnroe. Like, it's just great. And when I look at these guys now, I don't feel there's nearly the buzz or there's nearly the, I don't know, sort of attraction to it as there was when I was a kid. And that's even considering that these guys, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, pretty much blow my group out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
They blow them out of the water. I mean, I didn't even realize this. Most men's major championships in men's tennis, Federer leads with 20. Rafael Nadal is second with 18. Djokovic is third with 16. My guys, like Bjorn Borg, tied for sixth most with 11. Connors, tied for ninth most with 8. McEnroe, tied for 14th with 7. Like, and that's the era, and those are the guys that I thought were, like, that was the pinnacle of the sport. The sport's never been better. Those guys are small potatoes compared to what's going on right now.
Well, and you know.
So why isn't it bigger? Why isn't it? Because, I mean, maybe you weren't there to but hookers, people who are my age know what I'm talking about.
No. I feel like I understand what you're talking about.
That era, it was a big deal. Yesterday, this thing did a 3 in Boston.
Is that a good number?
No, I don't think so. For
I thought I read ratings were way up for it nationally. Maybe not in Boston, but okay. I thought I read they were way up.
So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, the Red Sox double that. And for just a regular season baseball, I don't know. Like, I just think if that were, you know, in my day, I hate to do that to you, but if it were
But go ahead.
But no, but it was. I mean, I think if that were one of those Connors, McEnroe, Borg, McEnroe epics, that it does a huge number and it's the story in sports. And now it's really just a sidebar.
Well, so I think the personalities then were, I mean, McEnroe, Connor, they were bigger personalities. I think Djokovic has some of that. And, you know, just watch the Wimbledon final yesterday. How much were fans loving Federer and how much were they not loving Djokovic? Djokovic is disliked because of, you know, he is exuberant after some points and complains to the chair umpire, went over and hit the chair umpire in the tiebreak yesterday, or hit his chair. So, you know, I think he has some of that. Federer's a dud. Have you ever heard Nadal talk?
Yeah, not. I mean, he's Spanish.
Yeah, no. I'm not even talking about his English. I'm talking about like his kind of high pitch, like me, like kind of the way he talks. So yeah. I don't know that lends itself very much to, you know, being a bigger star. So I think the personalities are a problem. And I don't know if you think length of tennis. I mean, it's always been a long game.
Well, 5 hours is.
But I, in a weird way, think that helped yesterday. You know, I think with social media buzz or people getting to it late in the day, all of a sudden it's 1 o'clock and you're like, oh, it's the fifth set. And how it's 9-8.
How come it's not bigger?
I mean, my best guess is the personalities.
Yeah, but it's really true. That era that I was talking about, I mean, Jimmy Connors and McEnroe and like, those
screaming at refs and you know, rivalries with one another.
Connors was married or engaged to Chris Evert when they were both number one in the world. Like, you had all those sorts of soap operas going on. It was a really interesting sort of circuit at the time. And I don't know. I mean, these guys just aren't as compelling. I mean, Federer is a super class act, but that's not that interesting, though,
no,
is it?
Super boring. I mean, that's why I root against him. Like, the guy's vanilla. So, no, but him yesterday, you win yesterday, that's 21. You're three up on Nadal, who basically wins the French every year. Like, you have to hope for an injury or give Nadal another, you know, Grand Slam next year at the French.
Are you a tennis guy?
Yeah, a little bit.
Did you watch the whole thing yesterday?
I watched the whole thing yesterday.
The whole thing?
I legit watched the whole thing yesterday.
Oh,
yeah.
This is why you're so freaking pale, Jones. Seriously, get out a little bit.
I had zero interest in leaving yesterday. I watched the whole I watched the women's final on Saturday. I watched Federer and Nadal on Friday.
So men's tennis has never been better.
No. I mean, I think they've won 11 straight majors. I was just looking at this. Ready in reverse order. Djokovic, Nadal, Djokovic, Nadal, Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, Nadal, Federer, Nadal, Federer. They've won 11 straight.
Holy moly.
And they've won 20, 18, and 16. Now, you mentioned Borg. Borg retired pretty young, right?
I think so.
Sampras did as well, I think. I mean,
Sampras was another bore. I mean, so, I say Sampras is another guy that helped kill the sport.
My only point is maybe the totals are a little inflated. Modern training, guys playing longer. Federer is about to turn 38, I think, before the U.S. Open. So that may inflate some of the totals. But, yeah, these guys trade off over the last 11 Grand Slams. They trade off every time. And I just don't know that the rivalries are as compelling between the two of them.
They're not.
The personalities, and they don't really play up a bit. Even the Nadal-Federer one, which is viewed as a bit of a rivalry, they're pretty classy with one another. Like, there's no, you know, sniping back and forth or anything that would really pull you in. Women's tennis has more of that than the men.
Oh, there's no question about it. The Williams have more, or Serena brings more edge to the court than the men do, and it's more compelling in that regard. It sort of is.
Yeah, and just the sniping. Like, there's more sniping at one another. There's not a lot of that in the men's game right now.
Well, it feels like the golf, and maybe this is just all sports. They've become more uniform, where it's just, back in the day, you all didn't go to the same academies with the same swing path and the same this, and everything is so, I think, back in my day, Jones, there was just more style. There was more variety in the way guys played. What I mean by style is, like, you know, there was, I don't know, they all didn't look the same. They all didn't play the same.
So Nadal doesn't play the same.
No, I know.
Nadal, I would say, plays very unorthodox and very different, but a lot of guys, it is the golf. Everybody has a swing coach. Everybody is trained to do the same thing. You know, they're all big serve guys. They're all right-handed. I mean, Nadal's kind of one of the guys who he's left-handed and plays unorthodox. Other than that, it's a lot of the same. Yeah.
Okay, so we just give you a second there. On the Wimbledon, you want to weigh in on that? You can. Back to Red Sox calls as well. Long commercial-free segment is next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Matt. Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back to your phones as promised. We've got Derek in Foxborough on Alex Cora last night. Hi, Derek.
Yeah, I'm one of the few who stayed up to watch that whole game like an idiot. But I think Cora blew the game. I mean, A-Rod, who probably knows more baseball than anybody, he was killing him on the broadcast for not bunting Hernandez there. And there was another move when he pinch hits for Michael Chavis, who, you know, is a home run, has 15 home runs. He can end the game with one swing. He pinch hit Brock Holt's for him, who's, you know, a singles hitter. So I don't think it was Cora's best night, but, you know, they shouldn't have even needed the game if Sale had taken care of business on Saturday.
Right, well, still,
but it was not his best night.
You want, I mean, even with Sale, I think that's what makes last night even more of a swing game, is that Sale did do that the day before. So you have a chance to take two out of three, rebound, and then you can say, well, it was just one guy who's not on his game in Sale. And so that was just an opportunity last night, I think, for the Sox to get some wind at their sails. That Jackie Bradley play where he gets thrown out at third on a grounder up the middle because Cora didn't bunt him. It's really two different topics to me. I would have bunted there. I would have. That's the one situation I do. Winning run at second, nobody out. Winning run at second, nobody out. Okay? Or first and second, nobody out is really the classic one for me. But that's where it's the only time I bunt, pretty much every time. So I would have done it. But I just think Jones did this in the first segment, which is just freaking wrong, to then blame Cora for Bradley getting thrown out at third. That's ridiculous.
I'm not blaming him for that. Stop saying that. I'm saying that it's inconsistent from Cora, and I would just like my manager to do the same thing both times. It's basically the same exact – I know guys at second instead of first, but one way you're bunting, if you're going to bunt a guy from first to second, you really should bunt him from second to third. And I think the caller makes a good point about Holt, too. Not only the pinch hitting part for Chavis, but I was reading some of what Tomasi had to write after the game, and I didn't connect these dots. That meant Holt was at first base. That was the interference play at first base.
I think so, yes.
And that's the second time this series. They played Christian Vasquez at first base. He butchered a bunch on Saturday. Then they have Holt there last night, and that was a problem.
Alan and Florida, your thoughts?
Well, I want to just quickly touch on the tennis. I found yesterday one of the great sporting events I've ever watched. And if you want to compare those two immature little babies, Connors and McEnroe, to these guys, you were right, Mike, about Federer, biggest choke I've ever seen. But anyway, getting back to the Red Sox, first of all, you know, if John Farrell, who I didn't like, but if he ever said what Cora did on the pregame yesterday, that Chris Sale is right there. I mean, he gave up a two strike. He was one strike away from David Fries getting a double. He was one strike away from this. He sounded like such a moron. And then he comes on, and there's no debate about whether he should have bunted. Okay, that's not debatable. Anybody that knows one inkling about baseball, there is no doubt about it. I mean, you didn't have Mookie Betts up, and you know you're talking about first base. Cashman was the best everyday lineup in baseball. He found room for Encarnacion, but the Red Sox without a first baseman, they couldn't find any room for him. I mean, he was leading the American League in home runs when they got him. And one other point, you know, Ryu had a tough first inning. He went seven innings. David Price had a little tough inning. I mean, he pitched all right. He went five innings. Five innings, David Price. Four and a third innings, Chris Sale. And if anyone doesn't think that this team is dead, you know, they'll beat up tonight on Toronto. Woo! Then they'll beat up. Then they'll go and play the Yankees and get killed again. You know, they'll beat up on Kansas City and Baltimore and Toronto. Whoopee. This team is terrible with a manager who didn't have to manage last year because every single thing fell into place. He could have sat there in magic wand.
Okay, Alan, I'm just going to stop you there. Ooh, angry. Alan.
I feel like Alan was the same guy who calls me a moron all the time, but he specifically called me a moron in April because I talked about how a bad start could doom their season, yet I'm the one who's sitting here right now saying the season's not over. And now he's the one who's got him dead.
I don't think the season's over, but you do go back to how they started, Jones. Why does a loss like last night on whatever, July, whatever this is, I can't even come close to telling you. July 15th. Why do you go back to April when they lose on July 15th?
Because if they weren't so far behind the eight ball, I think they could afford to drop a series like last night. Like, that was not a poor series by the Red Sox. It could have been better. I'd feel better if they won. They had guys on base all extra innings. Like, they easily could have won that game last night. They didn't, but they easily could have. They proved they can go toe-to-toe with the best team in baseball. I think the Dodgers have been the best team in baseball. But I can't cut them slack from the way they started this year. Like, you need to dig your way out of it. So if you're going to dig your way out, you need to take two or three when they're there for the taking. I can't give them a free pass.
Okay, here's David in Braintree, thought on the tennis yesterday. Hi, David.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Jones, first of all, it's mind-blowing to find out that you are a tennis guy.
Yep.
I guess you just come across a little too much as, like, hating life and being negative about everything. Also,
that's still true.
Mike, your commentary is so true, and you're so close to the elephant in the room. Connors, McEnroe, Serena even, what do all those people have in common? They're all Americans. Americans care about the sport when an American is good at it. Go back and look at the ratings for the five-setter against Andy Roddick and Federer at Wimbledon. I guarantee you the ratings will be for that were going to be higher than yesterday, even though yesterday's match was so much better.
Nice.
It's because we only care when an American is good.
I'll
it's
take
the same
it.
Thing
it's
with
a fair
soccer.
Point.
Why do we care about the women's national team, but we don't care about the men's national team? It's because the men's national team doesn't win. So you guys are spot on. Great. I love it that you're talking about tennis, but you just missed that big point.
Okay, well, I'll stop you. That's fair.
And here's something to back up his point. I didn't connect these dots, but Coco Gauff, the 15-year-old who beat Venus in the first round and then got whooped by Halep, American. And that was like a big story, you know, as big of a story as you're going to get the first week of Wimbledon.
But I'll just tell you, though. I mean, he's...
And some of that, she's 15, but I think a lot of it is that she's American.
I think there's a personality drain on the men's side. On top of the American thing, which I'll grant you. I think that's important. But even the women's side, when it's the internationals, even when, you know, so it doesn't have to be American, there's just a little more sauce over there on the women's side. Just whether it's Martina Hingis or, you know, I mean, she ain't American, or Steffi Graf, or I don't know. I just feel there's a little more buzz, a little more there on that side than the men's side, whether it's Americans or not. And I feel like maybe the men have become a little robotic, where the women still have a little flair and a little personality, and it helps in those sports.
No.
I think, to me, that's the thing that's killed golf, period. I think they're all freaking robots.
Yeah, and some of golf, we were just talking about this off the air, some of golf, they can't help, right? Like, you don't always go toe-to-toe. These guys pretty much go toe-to-toe, whether it's majors, Grand Slams, whether it's, you know, other smaller tournaments. I mean, they know they all have to go through one another. And, yeah, they just generally take the high road and compliment each other, whether they like each other or not behind closed doors. I don't know, but I could use a little bit more sniping and backbiting.
Well, what stands out to me, though, is I just, you know, I treated that era when I was a kid in the 80s as the golden era for tennis. And when you look at these three guys, they put McEnroe, Connors, and Len Borg and those guys to shame. They destroy those guys in terms of just their overall quality. They're maybe the three greatest of all time.
They've all won on every surface. I mean, you know, Djokovic and Federer barely won at the French because Nadal's so dominant. But yeah, they've all won on different surfaces. So they've completed the career Grand Slam. They're all 16 plus. So yeah, I mean, they're probably, if not the three best, certainly three of the best of all time. Yeah.
And they're every tournament head to head.
Yep.
Every tournament, you know, this was Nadal Federer in the semis and Federer Djokovic in the final. It feels like it's most tournaments they're facing each other. And is it just an American thing? I mean, that's part of it, but
that would help.
But
Roddick was pretty vanilla too. Like, Roddick was a boring.
Yeah, and so it was Pete Sampras. I think
Agassi was fun though.
Agassi was fun. Maybe the last one. Maybe the last fun, you know, male American tennis player who won.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Who won? Right.
All right. So, more of your thoughts. We started Red Sox. We'll stick with that. And we got some other things to get to coming up next hour as well. We got Adam Jones in the Maz chair, Hook in the update studio. He'll get you his update right here. It'll take 90 seconds. There are no commercials. We'll come back and take more of your calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.